JC2S, Part 2.
Number 13A.
So we're just hearing at this Mind is Mind tone in the science section on page 108 that Mrs. Eddy is showing that that going out from the divine mind, that she perceived another world than that world that mortal mind shows you. That she saw out from that throne of grace, out from that standpoint of mind, that life was not in and of matter. And therefore she broke that chain in her own life, as I said, that Darwinian sense of evolution, she says, which shut out the sense of spirit, of life in and of spirit. That you can't have them both. You either perceive the old woman, meaning life in and of matter, life in and of the second record of creation, or you perceive the young girl, life in and of spirit. You don't have both. They don't mingle. Therefore, because life in and of spirit never sees life in and of matter, and life in and of matter never sees life in and of spirit, because life in and of matter belief is in its own mesmeric, hypnotic state. And it has shut out the truth. So she says and goes on to say as a marginal heading, new lines of thought. See, I was a new creature. I was born anew in consciousness. My discovering that erring, mortal, misnamed mind produces all the organisms and actions of the mortal body set my thoughts to work in new life, channels. That led up to my demonstration of the proposition that mind is all and matter is not as a leading factor in mind science. So we see that the Christ brought her to new channels and that she therefore was healed because she was at that point, as we've already said, where Jesus raised Lazarus and said, come out, you also come out and break that chain of the Darwinian theory of evolution. I can help you do it as I did it. And now Mrs. Eddy did it the same. So you see, her consciousness also was at work in divine science. She was a willing disciple at the heavenly gate, she said, waiting on the mind of Christ. The Bible says, let that mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. That mind view broke her from that chain of evolution, and so she had the same mind that Jesus did. And therefore she could go on from that standpoint of viewing the world of life in and of God's spirit. So you see that this then, the short little epitome, see then that if we look at Mrs. Eddy's life and Jesus' life, they're following this tone then of life in and of spirit from divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. In the divine science tone, they're saying, we had a new birth, and it was from the Father, from life, from divine science. That now is our origin of our consciousness. And our consciousness is always on the level of absolute Christian science, new. It's always a new mutation. It's our consciousness is always coming suddenly, spontaneously, instantaneously out of our divine origin. And because we were born anew from the Father, suddenly, instantaneously, as a mutation, on Christian science, we broke all material resistance. We broke the laws of entropy. We broke the laws of dead matter. Isn't that wonderful? That's epitomizing that whole tone of life in and of spirit dimensionally. And we can do that because we're holding within the tonality of what she presented in a textbook. And as I was beginning to say, that a textbook is such that it just presents the skeletons, the bones of a subject, but we're always free to go in and elaborate such a subject as we maintain the integrity of the place value of where we are in the subject. So we can see now that text interpretation is vital, that it's not a religion of going back and reading a text over and over again. But Mrs. Eddy is giving, in her textbook, is giving us the skeleton, as I said, the framework for the new science, the new theology, the new medicine. And when we go in there and hear those tones, we're now getting the essence of the divine philosophy behind which science, theology, and medicine will be based, which we see then will impact world consciousness. So we see that where else do we get this divine philosophy? It comes from the textbook. And it isn't just, oh, I'm just reading the text, and why do I have to go in text interpretation? I'll let somebody else do it. Well, as I said, if we're really interested in life in and of spirit for ourselves, life in and of evolving spiritually, we have to be able to read a text. Because, as I showed, the Bible is a textbook that lets us exercise text interpretation. So is Science and Health, lets us exercise text interpretation. But the purpose is through this exercise that we read the book of life. We read the book of life experience. This exercise lets us hear the tones of what's going on in reality itself. It's from the textbook we're going to be able to show the world the divine philosophy, isn't it? So it's not just rereading or letting somebody else learn text interpretation so we can listen to it. That would rob us of being a spiritual mathematician, to be able to read the book of life ourselves. We're always going to need a teacher to read it for us. And as I said earlier, it's just like in regular mathematics. If our children come to us and say, here, you do these mathematics, I'm going off to play football or something. And we'll say to him, well, you do your mathematics because you're not going to be able to take me with you all your life. I'm not going to be going to the grocery store when I ask you to buy milk to calculate for you in mathematics. You would be lame if you had somebody else, me, your parent, do your mathematics. You must learn it so that you are an independent expression of that principle of mathematics, so you get along in life yourself, and you aren't lame needing help from someone else. And so it is with spiritual mathematics. We would just be lame. We'd limp. We'd always need somebody else to do our calculating for us. So, as I said, yes, it is advanced spiritual mathematics, but someday we have to advance to spiritual mathematics. I think we're ready. I think our class is ready already. We've done a wonderful job. And so it is something that is absolutely vital to our life in and of spiritual evolution. We will evolve only when we learn this. We begin to see. And then not only our life in and of spiritual evolution, but also how can we serve the idea, as I mentioned yesterday. How can we help see and be the midwives to see how the idea evolves? To be there to help serve the idea in its life in and of spirit, because it has stately science, pauses not. It has that inner acceleration within science, theology, and medicine that is going to go forward. How can we help with the birth? By seeing what's implied in the textbook here at Science, Theology, and Medicine, we only see what's implied is through text interpretation. Then we get the bones of which we can fill in the flesh about what's going on in the world today. But so by going in to such a section like Life in and of Spirit, well, we read what Mrs. Eddy says. It's wonderful. We underline what she says, and then we do abstractions of what she says. But those abstractions lead to greater abstractions, which shows the implications in the world today. Also, then we have the tool of the system that helps the world. It takes it just out of the textbook examples into showing it as world examples. So it's absolutely vital to us and to our mothering the sciences forward. So I think we're beginning slowly but surely, precept upon precept, idea upon idea. The beginning is meek, grow sturdy, and the maturity undecaying, evaluating what we are learning here. So now we go on to life in and of soul, and we just look at our epitomes, and we say, oh, yes. Now let's see if we can hear and stick to what we've done before. What are the categories that are indicated through these epitomes? So we put the first point, let's just turn then to our epitome book, and which gives us the epitomes, and we look there, and we see therefore that it's just the overall epitome is the one life lifts theology from a dead to a living practical theology. So I just repeat myself. We come now to the life tone again, always going back to the main point under consideration, which is the one life lifts theology from a dead theology into a living theology. And already, isn't the concept of theology beginning to live within us? And we say, oh yes, well that one life, that Christ spirit is revealed only to the receptive thought. So we say that that living theology, which is really a living theology of consciousness, that principle that lives, we say we're not going to be concerned of trying to give it to the unreceptive thought, to the churches, to old theology. Anyhow, she shows there that at the point of life in and of spirit, that old theology is just based on duality, on that second record of creation. And therefore, we see that this new theology is only going to come to the receptive thought in the universe, including man within us, and that this new theology is coming through that Christ idea, which is bringing the Christ spirit, which is going to overcome all material resistance in the universe, including man, including us, and it's going to take the universe forward. It's going to take all science forward, all theology forward, all medicine forward. It's going to take us forward. So she goes on with the subject and says, now that same Christ spirit, which is breaking down the unreceptive thought, that is breaking the limits of material resistance, that is evolving within our consciousness, as we see that life is in and of mind and life is in and of spirit, therefore that heals. We already saw at the point of life in and of spirit that that breaks down the belief of life in and of matter, so it healed that belief of life in and of death. And so we see that it not only heals the belief of matter and being born in matter at the point of life of spirit, but it shows that that same Christ spirit heals sin as well as sickness, and makes Christianity identical with science. Now, this is a big point because it is where so much of these malpractice cases are coming against religion for trying to heal sickness. Because for so long now, they have lost the sense that theology of Jesus, that living theology of that living principle love within his consciousness, that he was always at work within that realm of divine science, and that called his church, that theology of Jesus always healed sin as well as sickness, because it always healed the mental. It healed the mental of its false beliefs. And when the mental of its false beliefs were healed, it healed the physical, which was just the objectification of those false beliefs. Now, Jesus knew that, but that was lost. And therefore, in the medicine chapter, we'll see why. But theology heals sin and sickness. Because it was lost that theology healed sin and sickness, theology only now says, I'll heal sin, I'll heal the mental, I'll only work with the moral, the second degree, and I leave sickness to medical practices. But originally, theology, Mrs. Eddy said, healed both sin and sickness. It was within the domain of a living, conscious, spiritual consciousness to heal both. But today, that isn't so, she'll say. It has gone away from the original purpose of theology. So she says the same, and that's what tone. Same is always a tone of soul. Christ's spirit is life, that life spirit, that one spirit. That same Christ Spirit now for heals sin as well as sickness. What tone's there? Why? Sickness. So would if we just say sin, that's a wordy sense, isn't it? Because she could have said it healed the moral as well as sickness. We may not recognize it. So what makes it, yes, sin is a soul sense, but she could have said it heals ethically and physically.
Does it have to do with
money? Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Yes, you're on the right track, Ellen. Mm-hmm. Dave?
She's identifying sickness and sin as belonging to the same thing.
Okay, fine. It's the as well as that is really the soul of the agreement. Though you're certainly right, Ellen. Sin is a mental quality, which is where the beliefs are, and it heals the body, which is sickness. So you are right. But I just wanted to focus on the as well as, which is that soul heals both. It has the agreement between the mental and the physical. And that makes Christianity identical with science. What's the soul sense there? Identical with. So that Christ Spirit is going to heal both the mental and the physical, sin and sickness. See, it's going to heal the second degree and the first degree. Always bringing in those degrees. The spiritual is going to heal the mental, the second degree, and the physical, the first degree. And this is a war cry she says over and over again. And it's so important for us today because we think of where the Church of Christian Science is with their malpractice cases against trying to rely in healing children of sicknesses on the spiritual. So because it's just gone away from the fact that it's natural for the spiritual to heal sickness. It isn't just left to doctors to do that. So the world today doesn't allow theology to have that realm of sickness to heal. It's much more natural for us to go to the doctor. And then it makes theology identical with science, the same as science. It will show, therefore, that theology, that living theology is based on science to be a real living principle that lives, and that science has to have theology behind it to also be a living factor. Just like Einstein said that religion without science is on an insecure foothold, and science without religion also is insecure, but they need each other. And you know, it's said, and I'm sure we've all heard whether it's true or not, that he walked by a Christian Science church and said, "I wonder if they know what they have." So, therefore, we come to this whole tonality of life in and of soul. And because it is now time for us to break for lunch, I will give it as a assignment over the noon hour. It's very short. It isn't that long. But see if we can get into it using now the same methods as we have for the others, where we read quickly through life in and of soul, get the tonality. Then we've already marked our epitome. Now we're going to, after we read quickly through, go in and see if we can mark the text and hear predominantly life as soul in the text. So we'll color it our life tone and color it our soul tone, and you'll probably hear a lot of also the Christ as the Christ tones. Then, if there's time, see if you can abstract it or do a outline form of some of the work as far as you've gone. So, as I say, it's not too long of a tone, and we should be able to do quite a bit at the noon hour, and we'll come back and go on, and I'm sure I'll go on to life in and of principle, because life in and of soul is small, and we'll go on to that this afternoon. So, all right, we'll take that assignment. Yes, so now we come, as we know, to life is soul, where we then have seen and marked that the same Christ Spirit heals sin as well as sickness and makes Christianity identical with science. Now, I just wanted to make a few introductory remarks of this tone. It's a big one, I feel, because it seems to be really that difference between the religion of Christian Science and the science of Christian Science, that whole sense of the science of Christianity. If you remember, Mrs. Eddy will show in here that if there isn't science behind religion, then religion would be useless. And if there isn't, Christianity behind science, then science would be useless. A lot, as I said, what Einstein said there, I think, something like if religion would be lame without science and science would be lame without religion, as I early quoted earlier. Well, she says the same thing on 135 here. Christianity must be science, and science must be Christianity, else one or the other is false and useless. And I feel that this is perhaps the reason why, and I say perhaps, it's just something that one just begins to feel out, that, and we've talked, I think a few of us talked together about, that maybe why the church is being persecuted today, the religion of Christian Science, because it's not taking itself as a science of Christian Science. And we know that all this persecution is impersonal. Error is neither person, place, or thing. So with Mrs. Eddy admonishing us in this particular tone to make sure that science is Christianity and that Christianity is science, that if that isn't taken at this 6,000-year period, then that would be missing the mark and that would be sin of this age. So we see today that the church is being persecuted through various lawsuits for malpractice, insofar as that science or Christian Science is not healing sickness. And so we can see that, yes, maybe that is an impersonal claim that is trying to get Boston to wake up to the fact that they have missed the mark. And we see then that persecution is the opposite of life, and missing the mark is the opposite of soul. And that, as we can see, that missing the mark is a sin. But sin changes with every age. It's not the same concept. It's a concept which is empty until defined according to the place value of the age. So the sin today is missing the mark of the lessons of a 6,000-year period. Those lessons of truth, those lessons of the science of Christianity. Now, the church doesn't accept the textbook as a textbook, as a scientific textbook. And it doesn't, therefore, as Mrs. Eddy said, we must do on page 242, put on the full garment of Christ, where the textbook is a seamless robe, one web of consistency without seam or rent, all growing out of one root of the divine principle. Now, we see and know this. I'm not just saying this on hearsay, because when we read the literature coming out from the church itself, it absolutely blatantly is the antithesis and the exact opposite of what we see as the science of Christian Science. We aren't so surprised, because they excommunicated Dorley in his work back in, we know, the middle 40s, saying it was just personal and his personal interpretation. But we know now with the work in the Dorley-Kapler line that that these giants, Dorley and Kapler, have built their whole, Well, have let the Christ bring to them, through the mind of Christ, the science behind the Bible and the science that they, and that science they discovered in the textbook. And with that holistic consciousness, with that Christ consciousness of the letting that Christ work with them, with that whole holistic consciousness of a consciousness cultured in science, in the categories of science, as we have seen, we're unable to lock the Bible in the textbook. Now, as I say, the church absolutely refutes the Dorley-Kapler line and will present themselves as the complete antithesis. Now, this we see in a book called The Emergence of Christian Science in American Religious Life by Stephen Gottschalk. He's was one, and I suppose still is, at that time he wrote the book, a pillar in the Christian Science Church organization. And Max, in his booklet, Stately Science Pauses Not, booklet number 5, quotes from, though I don't know, from Stephen Gottschalk's book. I'm not sure if he, in a footnote in the back, may perhaps say that that's where that quote comes from, but he says it's from the church and from church authentic, he calls it authentic Christian Science literature, of which Stephen Gottschalk's book would be. And so he is quoting, and I just want to read now from Kapler's Stately Science Pauses Not, page just 35 to 36, to show how the church misses the mark, that they take it as a religion of Christianity, and they are missing the mark of this life is soul tone. And I feel because of that, that's why the persecution is coming, for missing the mark. And that is why it looks like that science is not able to heal sin and sickness anymore as it used to in Christian Science, in the Christian Science Church organization. Kapler says here on page 35 that authentic Christian Science literature is also beginning to share more and more the opinions of external critics. It too now takes the view that the textbook is not a textbook in the strict sense of the term, and that Christian Science is not a science in the strict sense of the term either. We read that Mary Baker Eddy, and now he's quoting from Stephen Gottschalk, did not write in a linear, rational style. Are you following me? He's saying, this is what Stephen Gottschalk is saying. We read, and Stephen Gottschalk says, that Mary Baker Eddy did not write in a linear, rational style, with one idea succeeding another in orderly progression, thus denying order. Can you see that's a complete opposite of what we teach? And then Stephen Gottschalk says, the statements that make up the paragraphs do not necessarily have any logical sequence. As Max says, thus denying that Mary Baker Eddy wrote logically. And Gottschalk says that the paragraphs are most often not clearly related to each other, and that the organization of the individual chapters in Science and Health and of the book as a whole partake of a non-linear quality. And by that he doesn't mean a vertical symphonic structure quality as we see. His non-linear quality means a random quality, that the book as a whole takes on a random quality.